Before we continue, one of the ways we keep all of our content for you, the listener, free of charge is our amazing sponsors, and today, Anchor is one of those sponsors. If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free, there's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcasts right from your phone or computer. Anchor is going to distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere podcasts are listened to, and you can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to Anchor.fm to get started.
You're tuning into the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. AfterBuzz TV, the destination for TV superfans. Producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows. Interviewing celebrities and showrunners. And bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Here it is.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I said
this
before.
This is great. I want to build a Spotify playlist around this song.
You know? Oh my gosh, I wonder. The Discover
Show me similar.
Weekly.
It's just all creepy German folk music. And
it doesn't get less creepy the longer it plays either.
No, it's creepier. It's the same static, like, monastic creepy all the way across the board.
Well, then let's just get started. Hi, everybody.
Good.
I am your host, Courtney Henderson. We are here for another episode of Man in the High Castle. We are here to do episode 4, Revelations. And, as always, I have two very handsome co-hosts.
Oh, why, thank you. She called us lovely last time.
I did.
I missed that.
Flattering.
Am I lovely as awesome?
No, you're handsome. See?
But you got both.
I got lovely.
Yeah, I'm just
handsome.
That's fine.
Who are you guys?
I'll be vapid. That's fine. My name is Keith W. Black. You can find me all over the internet at Keith W. Black.
And my name is Taylor Bolt. You can find me on Twitter at Taybolt, that's T-A-Y-B-O-L-D-T, or on Instagram at T-Bolt, also B-O-L-D-T.
Thank you.
T-Bolt sounds like a superhero.
Right?
T-Bolt.
It really does.
I think it started as like a username way back in like AIM days or something like that. I was like, this is cool. And then now it's
mine,
just
it was embarrassing, so I switched.
Wait, what was it? What was it? You have to share
it was now. Music Diva 9.
Diva.
I get the diva. It was E-E-V-A.
That's how you know it's real diva.
Yeah,
because,
it's true diva.
Well, because it was like, if you just spell it diva, that's like so...
Well, that's
what
cliche.
Do they call it today? Yeah. Basic.
Right.
Speaking of divas, I think that Juliana in this episode was a little bit of a diva.
A little bit.
Yeah, a little dramatic.
The thing I have to say first off, and I really wanted to say it last week because I had already watched episode 4.
Yeah, we had some trouble last week. We both seen episode 4 and we were here with Zach
who had not
seen it. And so I was trying not to spoil stuff for Zach and in turn...
Or
not,
the watchers.
Yeah, for any of you all out there.
Although, from some of the comments I've seen from our viewers, they've seen all of it and they just want more of us.
That's
true. Okay, we're just trying to catch
up.
Yeah.
Yes. So, but I really liked how episode 4 literally picked up exactly where episode 3 left.
Oh, like the moment
after. Yes. I mean, it could have just been one continuous scene.
Yeah.
With a commercial break or something.
Yeah.
I really... liked that. I'm definitely not a fan of like the previously on type crap. So for me, it was just like,
continued.
Right? Well, I mean, it's like we know exactly what's going on, and it just got us right back into the action, just instantly hooked again. Like the intensity just took you right back there.
Well, that's
which
awesome
I
thing
liked.
About like an effective cliffhanger is you don't need a segue. You don't need to get people back into it. You just play Edelweiss one more time and then pick up right where you left off.
Yeah.
They probably shot it in the same day too, or you know, the same at least.
And I mean,
days. There we go.
And it speaks accolades to the show in itself and the storytelling abilities of it. If you can choose a scene and halfway through that scene, pause it down, you know, you're going to want more. You're going to come back. Like, and the next week, just pick it right up. Like, they're not going to have to build. They're not going to have to produce previously on. They're not going to have to re-hype it up where you're coming into a new scene. Like, oh, let's get back.
Yeah.
Let's leave them wanting more for 5 minutes in the episode. We'll get back to that scene. They know it's good enough where if we stop down right now, the binge-watching fan is just going to be like, next up, let's do
that's
this.
The thing. It's like it's a part of the binge-watching environment where you don't necessarily need the previously on.
Right.
And next episode, like the little like flash-forward deal.
We're still only in episode 4, so of course there's not really a need for previously on yet. I mean, a lot of shows don't start doing that until they're several seasons in. But I just... Even still, a lot of shows still give you... they'll take it back 30 seconds, or, you know, like they'll replay the end scene. Yeah. I like that they didn't do that. They just kind of picked up where they left off.
Yeah, it was well done. I thought it was very well done.
Got us in there. So, yeah, so that was kind of my first thing.
And we find Juliana in a rather, shall we say, tense situation immediately.
Yes.
She is just trying to escape the marshal, and Joe is having a little bit of trouble finding her, ends up finding her. My biggest thing here was, like, I sort of knew when the scene started, like, okay, they're not going to die. Like, Juliana's not going to die here. Like, Joe's not going to die here. But, and I think that there are reasons for this that make themselves known a little bit later on. Perhaps, maybe, you could argue for them at least, but why didn't they kill the marshal when Joe knocked him out?
Yeah,
He knocked him out. He hit him in the back of the head, and it apparently was enough to make him go unconscious, but not enough to actually do any, like, brain trauma.
He's a perfect hitter.
Yeah, he was just the exact. I guess maybe he's trained in baseball bats or something, but he hits him exactly the right way, and then doesn't finish the job. They still are, like, trying to run away. So what? I don't know. I'm speculating. Why is there a reason that he needs to stay alive, or was this just sort of like that horror filmy, like, oversight where you incapacitate the villain, but then don't do anything about it, even though there's a perfectly good shotgun sitting right there on the floor?
I think it's because they want to keep their option open for him to be in the show longer.
Yeah, from a production standpoint.
Yeah, and you know, and coming from a production and acting background, I hate having to just use the excuse, look, well, it's a movie or it's a TV show. You know, right. It's just the way that it is because it's not real life. But, you know, because it is meant to emulate real life. But that's the only thing I can think. And I say that because in the episode, we don't see a lot of the Marshall beyond that. It kind of, like, moves
really
on, you know.
That's
and
true,
So I can only think that it gives us no reason to think that he's going to be in the next episode or the next episode. Like,
but
episode 3 made it very clear that in episode 4 he would be there, you know what I mean? So I feel like maybe it was a recurring role, maybe his part is done, but they want the option of being able to bring him back.
I have a feeling he's going to come back, or they would have killed him, but for me it's just, I get the, from the production standpoint of, like, okay, we don't want to kill off this character right now. Totally respectable. I totally get that. It's then how do you find, and there might be something that's just revealed later. I think that there's a good opportunity for something.
Yes. From a story standpoint, the only thing I could think, because, you know, with Joe, of course, we're trying to figure out, like, what side he's really on right now, because we know the side he came from. And so if the marshal is also Nazi related.
Yes.
You know, Joe knows that. Or knows he might be.
Right.
And therefore, it's kind of like, I need to protect myself or us and be safe. But he's still kind of potentially one of us.
Right.
Well, I think that he indiscriminately, you know, rules in that realm out there that he's kind of going about as well. I don't think that he would really have that weight behind him had he not had knowing the backing of the Nazi party behind him, because that's what gives him his luster.
Yeah, well, we've already learned that he was somehow connected to that SDH and that they killed on the bridge.
Yeah.
So we know that he has some affiliation with at least a Nazi agent in that capacity. And then Joe, you know, tries to get him to back off of Juliana, essentially, by pulling the Nazi spy, the Nazi agent status. So, I mean, he, I think, assumes for sure that that's going to work for whatever reason. Whether that's, like, his clout as being a Nazi agent, or, like, hey, we're on the same team. Don't mess with my target, you know? But either way, it is interesting when you look at it as, like, a tactical choice by Joe. Because my first thing as a viewer is that same, like, you know, when you watch like a slasher, you're just like, they're down, kill them, like, kill them now, like, it's your one shot. Like,
I mean, or I mean, maybe he thought he was dead. I mean that's kind of a naive, but I'm just saying.
If you're gonna shoot that scene and he's gonna come up and do the typical hitting somebody back of the head with a 2x4, and they're not gonna actually do the pause moment, we're gonna give that close up shot of Joe standing looking at the body, because that would be an accomplishment for them. They've been pursued by this person, that would have been a feat that they had overcome, a danger they'd overcome, but they kind of just moved past it. So,
and they acted like they still had to hurry, and he was really the only thing pressing them to hurry from what we could gather was So it was like, okay, let's get out of here before he comes to, is sort of how it felt. But so maybe for Joe, that explains why he wouldn't want to actually like deliver the final blow. Well, but why wouldn't Juliana? Why wouldn't Juliana at least be like, hey, can we, you know?
There's like an adrenaline and a shock. I mean, and I think survival mode is also kind of like, we have a chance to get away. If I try to hit him, if I stick around, he could come back. You know, he could regain consciousness. There's so many uncertainties of staying. I mean, and it's one of those where, I don't know, you also have to be, you know, a murderer willing to be a murderer. And not to say that their lives aren't in danger and that it wouldn't be self-defense and that almost any one of us, because of, you know, human nature and survival mode, wouldn't try to kill or, you know, if put in the situation to save your own life, you have to kill, you know.
Yeah.
But it's all easier said than done, I think.
Sure.
Is what I'm getting
at. I can accept that. Like, they just wouldn't want to just take a human life sort of thing.
Yeah.
There is sort of this righteous nobility, especially to Juliana's character. Joe's, you know, we've seen him kill before, sort of indiscriminately. I mean, the very first episode, one of the first things he does is kill a Nazi just because, to endear himself, I guess, to the people that are about to be captured. It didn't really seem like there was a huge point other than that he wanted to get away.
And I think also proving, you know, trying to, you know, prove his story, his backstory, and like, oh, I wouldn't kill a Nazi agent if I was a Nazi, but well, you have to remember the Nazis,
you know,
them pawns.
I'm looking back at that scene, and to me it's like the resistance guys that he's with.
Are you talking about in episode one?
Episode one. Okay. Like, just to harken back to that really quick. The resistance guys that he's like just met up with, who he's taking, you know, the truck and they're for the film.
Yeah, I'm not just a punk.
Yeah. He at that point, he knows the Nazis are going to take them all. He doesn't need...
Do you think he does know that? Because that was my thought that just came to mind.
I think he's got to. That guy fell directly into Obergruppenführer. I could say it last week.
Yeah.
Obergruppenführer's hands. So I think that was definitely part of the same operation.
But we also hear Mr. OBF. That's what I'm going to call him.
John Smith.
Yeah, John Smith. We also hear the Führer talk about how everybody's kind of got their own... what's the word I'm looking, like, missions or kind of this is not something that they like all sit down and have like a staff meeting about and everybody knows everybody's role. It's like
you're talking about,
do what you're told, you know. It's on a need to know basis,
right? You're talking about in reference to the agent that they killed on the bridge. Yeah, but he's a different department is what I
no
got.
I mean, when
agent.
They went in episode one and like shot up the whole place, he just got the keys from to go drive the truck away.
Right.
Did he know they were coming in after?
Yeah.
I feel like he had to, because Obergruppenführer sent him, and Obergruppenführer presumably sent the others because he had direct jurisdiction over the prisoners. Like, when they captured the resistance leader, it went right back to Obergruppenführer, and he's the one who orchestrated getting Joe in there, right? So I think that he definitely orchestrated that
whole
thing.
It was one mission.
Right, that was one mission. But
let's go back to episode four, since we're talking about murder.
What I wanted to say in regards to that is Joe decides to kill a Nazi, right? He decides to kill a Nazi when he doesn't necessarily have to. Like, there's not necessarily a reason that he needs to, but he decides to kill that
Nazi. But there might be.
Nazi.
I mean, because how many people in the resist... Or how many people know that Joe is Joe and that he wasn't part of the resistance?
You mean, like, who he is as a person separate
from
the Nazi
party?
Yeah,
I'm saying, like, do the Nazis know who Joe is?
I don't think a day-to-day...
Exactly,
like,
so he may have just been...
Enlisted man does.
Defending himself.
That's quite possible.
But it doesn't matter. We got to go back to episode four.
I just feel like there's something that we're starting to see seed into Joe's character that we was sort of maybe foreshadowed at there, where there is sort of this underlaten desire to kill Nazis. Like, maybe, like, he's not...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Even deeper than what we're learning from
before
him about
he realized
being a Nazi agent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was
like
in his subconscious.
Exactly.
Okay.
Before he realized it, or maybe before he's revealing it. Maybe we still don't know it yet as the viewers.
Right.
That he's actually... That he didn't necessarily have to kill that Nazi, but he wanted to, and he did because he could. You know what I mean?
Right, without getting caught. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, that'll tell.
Yeah, this was a flashback.
So, episode four, Revelations, let's talk about Frank and his gun and what he's going to do with this gun. I mean,
I think the first thing that we see about Frank is this is the first episode where he's actually taking a strong stance towards something greater than himself.
Yep.
He is now, I'm getting a gun. Like, that's, and he coincidentally makes replica guns, so that's, I mean, that just kind of lines
coincidentally.
Up really easily. And he
very convenient.
Yeah, I'm assuming what he adds the firing pin or some mechanism because they're supposed to be hyper realistic. And just his push towards, no, this is what I'm going to do. I've lost my family. I've lost everything. And I don't think that it's Juliana that's motivating it. I don't think it's anything but pure vengeance. And I still don't think that he's fully swayed into the with the mission and the resistance. I think that his goal is selfish.
It's personal,
at this point.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't know that I agree that Juliana isn't in somewhat of motivation. But I definitely agree that he is not on anyone's side but his own.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
He's doing what he needs to do. And his poor little buddy Ed, I believe is his name.
Ed, yeah.
From the replica warehouse. Just can't catch a break with him.
Well, Ed's a very loyal friend. Yeah. It's probably, he's too loyal for his own good, especially when, you know, we start to see Frank's intentions as being not necessarily the most noble, or noble, depending on, you know, what side you're on,
and,
I guess.
And that's the interesting thing about it, because I really liked his insight or reasoning in the sense that if I just go kill the cop that took Laura and her kids from me, then, you know, they're just going to throw another guy in the spot. It's not doing anything.
Yeah.
He's not just trying to get, like, an eye for an eye. He's saying, I want this whole thing to go away. I don't want killing Jews to be a thing people can just do. You know?
Which is a reasonable...
Right. So...
Well, I mean, I think if you look at history, like, any sort of big political assassin has had that sort of... that same revelation in one way or another. You know, it's
who
about...
Who are you trying to, compare him to?
Well,
right.
I think well, anyone. And I'm not saying it in any way endears him. I just mean that when he's killing someone who, because I mean, we as the audience have met the prince, right? And the prince is pretty cool in my books. Like he's, you know, I mean, he's the leader of an empire. So like, there's that. But he has a heart for his people, unlike any of the other characters in power that we've seen.
Right.
He seems to, at least, right. But that doesn't matter. Frank wants to kill the prince because it represents the system to him. I mean, the same thing like Brutus and Caesar,
but doesn't
John Wilkes Booth, any
whether
of that.
He likes it or not, doesn't the prince kind of represent the system?
Well, he does.
I mean,
but I think he's a naive version. I think like just his entire desire to
his being Frank.
Not Frank. I think Frank's decision is naive about how he's going about it. But I think the prince himself is naive for putting himself in a position where somebody like Frank. I'm sure there's more people out there Frank that have the desire to attack the prince.
To me, again, like we were the audience. We were privy to a lot of more information than maybe any one of these characters would be individually. But it seemed pretty obviously someone was going to take a shot at him. You know, like that wasn't. I wasn't really surprised. It was like something bad was going to happen because it became like a loaded gun. You know what I mean? And the prince wanted to go ahead. Like he got warnings. He still wanted to go ahead with it. It was just it's a perfect scenario for disaster. You know what I mean? Especially to have him be built up as this sort of maybe quasi benevolent power figure. You know, it's...
Well, all I'm saying is, when it comes to Frank's perspective, regardless of what the prince actually believes himself and stands for and what he wants to do, in Frank's eyes, or anybody's, which is why Frank's probably not the only person that wants to take a swing or a shot, all he represents is what they experience.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so Frank's experience is, they just killed my family because I couldn't tell them where my girlfriend is. I don't even, and I don't have any information on her. Like, it's not like I'm withholding information I have. I can't tell them anything, and they killed my family because we're Jewish, and they thought I would tell them, you know.
Yeah,
and,
he's killing a symbol.
Right. And unfortunately for him, because we as an audience do have information, what he wants and what the prince wants actually probably align far more than Frank realizes. Because we see the prince talk about wanting to move towards peace.
Right.
And
that's
all
actually
of his
what
generals,
the banner was
yeah,
it was
peace and happiness.
Yeah, peace and happiness.
Yeah. You know, and all of the generals, they talk about the generals all want a war cry.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want the speech to be.
So it's sort of the irony. I think what you're saying is that the irony here is that in trying to disrupt the system, he's actually disrupted the peace that was there, you know?
Right.
Or maybe, if you go deeper than that, he is part of the, even though he didn't actually do anything, we learn at the end of the episode, he is undermining sort of the tentative peace mm-hmm. between the Japanese states and the Great Reich. And maybe in a way that could lead to the undoing of the Japanese states, which was his initial intention. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think, especially when we're talking about relation to his family, they're having Jewish heritage and that mm-hmm. being an issue, I don't think that that's a better alternative in any way, shape, or form. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. If the power shifts to the Great Reich, then that's you're going to be in the same situation.
I would say worse.
Active
because, I mean, historically, in our reality or in the alternate reality that is the show, it wasn't the Japanese that decided that Jewish people should die in the masses first. No, you know what I mean? Yeah. It was not them. So for him to think that that would be kind of the way out or the way to change, I think, was a little bit naive.
He's got tunnel vision in what's driving him.
I mean, he's obviously not thinking rationally.
I mean, if you're shot and you're still like, no, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm still going
to
do this. You're looking suspicious as can be. You're throwing yourself away.
At the end?
Yeah, no, I just love to talk about the fact that Frank, okay, we can say whatever we want about him, but dude takes a bullet in the arm, right? Takes a full bullet in the arm. I mean, he's like, I assume that it like missed the bone or else that would have just splintered and but like he manages to just kind of go about his business at that point with a bullet in the arm.
Yeah.
And I mean wouldn't you go into shock? I feel like
probably why he could.
Why he could
the shock, because the shock is what keeps the pain. Adrenaline, I would say, and shock.
Sure,
shock
doesn't last, you know, the rest of the day. Shock lasts as long as your hormones are in that state. But I mean, to me, it's like you get shaky, right? You get. I mean,
And he held the gun with that arm, because when he was holding the gun, there was blood dripping down his hand. So you get shot in the arm, and you're like, "No, this is symbolism. Like, I'm going to use this hand." You're like, "Dude, just left hand. It'll still probably be pretty accurate. Yeah. You know, at least way."
No, it would not be anywhere near as accurate. But
as a shot in arm,
having a wounded arm is not going to be nearly as accurate.
I mean, the reality of him in any way being able to shoot him under those circumstances, like, it's not gonna happen.
Just going in the crowd, I'm gonna get
I don't know if you have any experience shooting guns. Not in a crowd. No, I mean, in the proper, you know, target shooting, with both hands and no distractions, it's still really hard.
Yeah, you're good for 20, 30 feet.
Trained. I mean, even people that practice regularly, they're not. It is very hard to shoot somebody to a fatality or even hit them at all. I mean, he got shot in the arm. In the arm. Like, if his buddy's trying to hold the gun. I mean,
I don't know
what trying to kill him.
Yeah,
I don't think he meant to do it. I don't think, he was just trying to scare him.
No, absolutely.
But it goes to show you, that close, holding the gun straight at him, and he's still nicked his arm.
Yeah,
right.
Then that's it.
Yeah, I just think that if he's going to get shot, he's still going to try to use that arm to hold the gun to assassinate somebody. Like, he's so driven to assassinate this guy, he gets shot in the arm, and his thing is, I'm not going to put it in the hand that hasn't been shot. I'm going to hold it in the arm that is wounded. And I mean, I couldn't even imagine, like, you're lifting your arm, shot in your arm.
Exactly.
Like, that goes back to the nick or something. I mean, I don't think
it was, I mean, if we look at the wound, it's not like a nick. So, I mean, it clearly missed the bone, or else he wouldn't be able to, like, lift the arm the way that he did. All the logistics of actually being able to fire.
He also didn't lift the gun, like, crazy high.
Well, he would need to, but he didn't actually get around to it.
That darn kid.
As we learned.
That's what I'm saying. So, like, that for... No, but, I mean, but it also may have been some of that other stuff, too, where, like, maybe he physically couldn't do it. Maybe he morally couldn't do it,
Sure.
I mean, because he's looking at this little kid.
He does decide not to.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely decided not to before he knew somebody else was going to take a shot, or somebody else took a shot. Like, he had already decided no. And I think that the kid played a little bit into that, but I think the kid was just a reminder of kind of like what's really at stake, and kind of
I agree.
You know what I mean? More than it was like, I can't let this kid see me kill a man. Like,
not
I don't
everyone's
think
an enemy,
right? Yeah. Right.
It was like the youth. It was the innocence. Yeah. It was the innocence of that still sort of existed. I think under the guise of this tenuous peace, you know, it's sort of like not, you know, whether or not Frank actually could think this sort of macro in the moment, I don't know, but it's like if the prince dies, all of a sudden stuff's going to go down, like innocent people, this kid perhaps, or others, many others like him, all of a sudden are at risk. And in his sort of blind rage, it's easy for Frank to forget that. But then when he's faced with it, and this kid sort of goes, "Huh? What's that? Is that a gun?" and like looks up at him, you know, it's becomes emotionally relevant for him at that point in a different way.
I'd like to make a slight prediction if we can do a prediction on it, because there's no basis of who shot this guy. Two shots in a crowd from a distance, and there was not a hint. There were no cutaways, no shots. I went back and scrolled through and see if the camera focused on anybody.
Well, let's save it. We'll go back to predictions.
There were two shooters.
I want to talk about, before we go to predictions, I want to talk about going back to Juliana and Joe and Lem. Mm-hmm. They go to his house.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean,
first of all, they get the one guy that I called albino last week. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't know how else to describe him. No, unfortunately,
I believe
because he's not. But he just
is he not? I mean,
I don't think so.
I thought that's what they called them. Did they not call? I thought they referred to him as the albino at one point.
Yeah,
in the show.
I'm under the impression, and I should probably fact check this, but I was under the impression that it was an actor with albinism, which I thought was very cool.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we should look that. We should look into that, because I would love to know. Actually, not just. And judging by appearance,
he risked himself as well.
Yeah, right.
Benefit. Like, for him, he going to gain?
He's still alive, so you know who knows what role he ends up playing or who he ends up being.
And
you know, later on,
come back for sure.
So they go to Lem and they work it out that they're going to go up to meet the man in the high castle.
Yeah,
to give him the film because apparently Lem's the contact for Trudy and. Lem passes the films on to the man in the high castle.
Mm-hmm. I love Lem. I think as the first look into resistance leader.
I did love Lem. I'll put it that way.
Well, I still
did.
Kinda...
You guys see that coming?
Which aspect?
When he takes them up there and they like turn around, and he's got like 10 guys around him, all shooting, like holding guns.
I don't necessarily.
No, I loved it.
I can't say that I saw it coming. The thought that I did have. Is now that these films are there, why do they have to take them directly to the man in the high castle? Like, that was my thing where I was like, shouldn't they just take the films, you know, which is ultimately what happened. But in the moment in that scene, no, that was a surprise for me, and it was pretty
good
cool.
Surprise. Yeah. I liked it.
As soon as Joe realizes, like, he's not coming, which is like, the lights flickered, and I was like, no, what's going to happen? And then we see Lem and his buddies turn around and draw guns on him.
Because we already know that it's been potentially foreshadowed, that Joe could die because of his talk with the Führer.
Yeah, and that's the first time John Smith showed
and
his
true
relation.
And that's where he got the like very specific directive to leave the film in the car or the truck. And to be basically willing to kill or be killed or both,
right?
You know, for the man in the high castle. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Führer is willing to give up Joe to also get the man in the high castle,
right?
Which is a gamble.
And all Juliana wants is some freaking answers.
Yeah, she's,
you know, like she's not.
She's
the more
most
I watch
this,
she's actually not even really part of the resistance.
Yeah,
no.
She just has a lot of questions, and I feel like in episode 5 that becomes even clearer.
Right.
You know, that she's just really looking for answers, which I thought was interesting.
And I feel like Joe is too. I think that the thing is with Joe is his motives are still not clear. Like we still don't really know.
Right. So
he's very conflicted,
and he's almost exposed. And then as we know, you know, he was told not to bring the film, and he does, and it saves his life.
It saves his life, but he gives over the film, which misobeys his directives. So now
but
we're kind of like, what's going
to
happen for Joe?
Well, I think the timing of that is essential because we've seen that he has been wavering. Every time he talks to John Smith, he wavers. And the Heil Hitlers became more delayed at the end of the phone calls. The conversations had more time in between them when they actually touched base on him. He's getting
late.
A little bit, he's getting a little more free. And then when they have the conversation where he's talking to John, and John says, "Well, look, if you see the man in the castle at the expense of your own life, you need to kill him." And like that's so he had this relation to this man because he knew his father knew him. You could tell that he didn't really know his father very well, because he mentioned that in episode 3, I think.
Yeah.
That he didn't really know his father very well. So this is the only guy that he has a relation to. And this guy just said, well, you could... You're expendable
right.
to me. So now that for me, I was like, that just broke his that one bond, that shred of bond that he had with
to
over, yeah,
Heil Hitler, yeah, kind of
to,
thing. Yeah,
to the system.
And
to
now
the
his yeah. now his a focus and, you know, the side of the war he's on is Juliana, and that's he's shifted. Mm-hmm. He's no resistance nor Nazi. Mm-hmm. He is Juliana is his focus, and keeping her safe is his focus.
Well, and
I don't disagree. I feel like there's more twists and turns to be had in Joe's journey, for sure. But yeah, I think that was sort of the first time at which it was just on a really fundamental basis, like, oh, he's not just going to be sort of this poster child for Nazis.
When I went to watch episode 5, I was on episode 4, you know, on my Amazon Prime, and it actually says in the, you know, episode description something about Joe's falling for Juliana.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was interesting, because we talked about it in predictions last week, but you can kind of see that there's, like, sort of a chemistry and...
No, totally.
Like, will they or won't they, or are they or aren't they, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, and... Because they never get close to kissing or any of that. But there's just sort of this, like, tension, you know?
Oh, there's tension,
And it's one of those things where it's interesting to me because I feel like it's so subtle in the episode for them to have said that as, like, an outright, this is what's happening in the episode, was really kind of a shock to me.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
I found it interesting because, to me, it makes sense. And I actually feel like... After reading that, I was like, okay, there's actually less tension than I thought. It's more just him falling for her, and he's making all of these, because she's just, like, so focused on her sister. I think she's kind of, like, tunnel visioned in, which is why I also think she's not even part of the resistance. She's just kind of like Frank, like, she's out for herself. Just her motives and what she's looking for is a very different thing than what Frank is looking for.
And you know, she's already hurt Frank by focusing so much on herself and her family. At what cost?
And
you saw what that did to Frank's
yet.
Family. Yeah,
she doesn't
know. She's being detrimental in her wake because of how ignorant she is in this world. Like, you were in an occupied country. This is not somewhere that you can just be free-spirited and go about your own agenda. That's what the term occupation means.
Like, yeah, exactly.
It's no longer your allowed.
You answer to a government power.
And so Lamel, I think that's his full name, Lem, Washington, he's another the first powerful person of resistance. So it's nice to see that contrast, because he's smart, driven. He knew that Joe was a goose-stepper, as he called him, from when he's in that cafe, because that's why he never made contact with him, because he saw him and he knew what had happened back in the town in episode 1, and he's like, no, Nazis don't mess up. And so it's nice to see that strong resistance leader to parallel John Smith.
Yeah. It's interesting, because I'm anxious to see how powerful he actually is in the resistance, and I wonder, like, when we'll actually get to see some of that, like, how... how much clout he actually carries, because I can't tell
how
much
big
just,
it really is or isn't.
Right. Well, we know that we don't know how, to me, it's not necessarily, I want to know how big it is, but I also want to know how interconnected it is. Because,
well, that's
like,
what I mean.
Yeah. Like,
big as in one big web versus
organization.
Like
does the man in the high castle actually have some sort of organized resistance strategy, or is this just like...
Yeah, militia everywhere here
it's
and there.
Just, like, for example, like the attack in the previous episode on Obergruppenführer's life in New York. Mm-hmm. Like, is that something instigated by the man in the high castle, or is that a group of guys who managed to get a hold of some guns?
They're still checking into the breach.
Yeah, and they still don't know
where that's coming from.
And it seems like they sort of concluded their search and didn't find anyone. And Obergruppenführer was just like, that's not an option. Like,
we have to keep figuring this out. Yeah. But
at a great
there's
cost.
No plan of action forward. Which I also I totally forgot to talk about with the marshal, because they didn't kill him.
Right, they didn't. Yeah,
so. In checking my notes, they staged Juliana's death for him to find.
Yeah. Right.
And so maybe that's why they didn't kill him. Like, they knew that he would come after them, and they
wanted
to solidify the death.
You know what I mean? But but then also knowing that if the marshal's dead, somebody's going to come looking for him and then looking for them. You know, so if they keep him alive, but make it kind of look like, I don't know, he needs to be off the trail for them, because she's not on his cards.
Well, because she can also report back. Like, he especially if he's going to get in touch with... Because that actually is a good reason, if you look at, like, why Joe might have decided to reveal himself as a Nazi agent and give Obergruppenführer Smith's name, is so that the marshal could report back and sort of say that this mm-hmm. girl died, you know, sort of.
Well, that's what yeah. I mean, yeah. So it saves Joe's life because he knows that the marshal and him are ultimately working for the same guys,
right,
you know.
Right.
And then if the marshal's dead, somebody's going to come looking for him and then come looking for, you know, who did it yeah. and all of that.
Right.
Whereas this way, like, the trail's clean. You know, if the marshal goes and asks the Fuhrer about Joe, it's going to check out. Mm-hmm. And when he goes hunting after the girl, it checks out. She's dead. You know, they made it very clear kind of a thing. When in reality, they're both now just on to the next. And the Fuhrer doesn't know anything about this Juliana girl.
Yeah.
Or the Trudy girl, right? Well, maybe he knows about Trudy just because of the resistance stuff. But, you know, so, but I saw my notes and I just wanted to go back to that because I think maybe that's why they kept the marshal alive.
It could be, yeah.
But also, that's nuts. I mean, the you know, you think about just how everything had to come together and going and getting the body out of yeah. the cave and all of that so that it looked real and, like, there was a person in the car.
Yeah, and they did it pretty right. pretty darn quick. I mean, yeah, like, right? really we staged quick, yeah. a murder in, like, under a half hour and a half.
Exactly.
Like,
in
yes,
the length
we're
of time
good.
It took, in the length of time it took the marshal to wake back up. Yeah.
Right.
The blow to the head.
Don't you think that Juliana should be a little concerned as to why Joe is so good at this? He's like, oh, we're going to stage a murder. We're going to get a car down there. We're going to hijack that thing. We're going to drive down the road, burn it, and grab that body. Okay.
She's so easy going. She's like, yeah.
She's like, that's great.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's
wow,
true.
This guy's a go-getter. you know, I think I'm falling for him.
Yeah.
Now we know why.
Yeah, exactly.
I would be smitten. I'm like, wow, this guy saved me.
We haven't seen
me.
Frank stage a murder like that.
Yet. No.
Step it up, Frank.
All we see Frank do is, like, go see Juliana's mom.
Right.
I mean, yeah. What a good guy, though. Right? He's going to go visit the mom.
That's important, right?
Yeah, that is crucial.
Well, let's go on to predictions.
That sounds good.
Let's go on to predictions.
I would like to predict on the shooter. Okay, let's get our little flow
like
going.
A light show.
Yeah, there we
go. Sorry, I just love the light
it's
show.
Just good.
The prediction gods will smite you for trying to start without them.
I just want to really go into who fired the shots. Two shots into the chest of the prince. And in my mind, who has the most to gain from this would be the Nazis.
Yeah.
I think that the Nazis orchestrated it from a really high level, and they had the prince shot because he was the only sense of, you know, objection to the let's have a war cry, let's fully keep this in embattlement, and instead he's the one sense of, no, we can have peace. And so I think total Nazi move, easiest thing for them to do if they take the prince out, is going to get a cry of safety that they need protection. If the prince can be shot, then anybody can be shot.
Mm-hmm. Right.
More soldiers, more reason for occupation.
Yeah.
Just fits in my mind.
I'm wondering, God, I really wonder how many people knew that this was going to happen, because I feel like this is more of a conspiracy. I feel like there's more characters.
Really? You don't think it's an individual? Obviously
like
an individual made the, you know,
sure.
did the dirty work, but...
Unless there were two shooters.
Yeah.
Which is another prediction.
Well, and it's, you know, how many people maybe had a gun and just, like, that was the first one to take to make the shot? Because we know that Frank had the gun and didn't actually take the shot. I think that...
Two separate guys.
Yeah, just, everyone just kind of, oh, and, like,
they see each other in the crowd.
Oh, hey, Joe!
Like,
oh, what's up? How you doing? How's the wife? I think that the killing the prince is a conspiracy. I think that the Nazis, or at least some sort of Nazi organization, is involved. I don't think it's just an individual. I also would like to predict that the marshal doesn't think Juliana's dead.
Okay.
Just it seems to...
Doesn't think, okay.
Like, doesn't think that she's dead, just
See,
because...
my prediction would be that he discovers that she's not. You know, that something tips him off to look again.
Yeah.
That's a very likely possibility, I think. But for me, it's really how far I suspend my disbelief. Because for me, if I'm the marshal and I see, you know, what's, I think, a man's body, mm-hmm. but like you see, like...
It's the woman that was tortured in the cave.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you see a body in a car, right? To me, it's like, why is this car so conveniently ablaze right now? It's not really...
And already char.
It's, yeah, it's, like, if someone wraps a car around the tree, it doesn't just then combust and then burn. It looked like a gas fire.
It might have back
know?
Then, though.
Yeah.
It might have. That's the thing. I mean, I don't know. I don't know, but, like,
1960s
cars.
I mean, I'm not trying
cars.
To... Right. I mean, and I think you are obviously onto something as well. But I also think I mean, it, again, you like you did this in what, like an hour? Yeah. Or you know what I mean?
Sure. Probably
so
less.
It's not like they had all this gas. It's not like they had all this time to get resources. I mean, I feel like almost all the time that they had to go towards like getting the body.
Sure.
But I do like the prediction that that storyline isn't over.
Yeah. No, I definitely think that storyline's not over. And I think that we're going to see the Marshall. I'd like to predict that we're going to see him not just in Cannon City. I have
the Marshall. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I have a feeling he's gonna either maybe he's still on Juliana's trail or something else is going on.
Well,
there.
Speaking of capturing Juliana, I think the Japanese are going to capture Frank because of the list that he had to write his name down when he got the antique bullets. Where are you going to get bullets so often?
Yes.
And that guy wrote his name down
and
for liability on himself.
Yes.
Well, what's interesting, I'm wondering...
Or if he's going to get turned in.
Sure. I think that he might get turned in. I'm interested because those are a very specific type of bullet, as we find out in the episode.
Yeah, he only could buy three.
Yeah, he can only buy three, but it's also like, what are the chances that the bullet that killed the prince is that same kind of bullet?
Unless that guy had more.
Yeah, well, unless that guy had more.
That guy's just selling bullets off that day.
Well, no, I mean,
what was that kind of gun?
Thought,
that kind of gun was a specific. It was like a Colt. It was like a Colt 45.
He said he only had three bullets.
Oh, okay.
He bought all the bullets that he could.
Yeah.
Right.
It was my understanding
the
gun.
I feel like that might be another reason why Frank, if he does get caught, maybe gets off the hook, is because they can look and then they say, like, oh, well, these are this kind of bullet. This is, like, this caliber for this gun.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the bullets that killed the prince or...
Are not.
Yeah, there's some this other caliber of bullet.
It's got to be a third strike for him, though.
So I'm going to predict...
Sure,
I'm going to predict...
Bullets, dude.
Last prediction, and then we'll move on. Last prediction. I'm going to predict... That, just to kind of play devil's advocate, that it was an inside job.
Oh, okay.
Because he does want peace, and they don't want peace. And so they need to get somebody to be the symbol that stands for and is going to either just be a puppet and do what they say or has the same belief that they do to move into war, to try to go into war against the Reich and the neutral zone versus, that it was an inside job because they're really the only ones that know he's going to go say peace.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah, the Nazis and the Japanese.
So just throwing that out there.
Okay.
Yeah. And I guess any last thoughts or remarks?
Yeah, I mean, the final thought I have to say is we really got into the assassination. We got into what was happening, but we didn't really discuss what was happening behind the assassination with Rudolph and Togomi.
There's
microfilm.
There's something going on there, yeah. Rudolph has some sort of plans. Yes. I saw like a molecular diagram on this microfilm that he wasn't able to get into the pocket of his contact.
Yeah.
He's trying to get this film into the pocket of this guy, and he wasn't able to do it because the assassination interrupted it. I have a feeling that... one more prediction... Just in the spirit of predictions, I think Togomi knows who took the shots. I don't necessarily think that he is part of that conspiracy, but I think that he knows who is.
Yeah.
If he's not, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like I think that he knows.
Well, yeah, he's the trade minister,
right? I don't think that he was entirely surprised.
Well, my final thought on the overall Togomi Rudolph is just that I like the symbolism and how much of an over arc film has. In this universe, that's very interesting. Where microfilm, a film roll, like the cinema, like everything they're doing is around footage, video, it's press, and nobody knows what happens. It's nothing. Even after he got shot, Juliana's nobody's aware immediately of what happened. People are like, "What's going on? Why is everything? Why is the city shut?"
And that goes to show the time of, the time the book was written, just the time in the world that this takes place.
And the power of media, power of press. It's just incredible.
True. Because this is...
Especially now, because they didn't have it like we do now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. Like, the entire, blossoming of the media never really happened in this context. Because, I mean, you talk about, when you get into, especially, like ad-age sort of stuff, where it becomes, the 1960s, 1970s was a huge growth of advertisement media.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, they didn't have that, which I think is why this film's... Because, people don't really know what films are. They don't really... They don't even have TVs yet. You know what I mean? They're watching these on projectors. And anyway,
Very cool.
Well,
that is a good observation too. There are no TVs. Yeah.
Right. Well, I don't think they're around yet.
Yeah. No.
Well,
I think it's just radio.
They were watching. No. They were. Joe was in his hotel room watching the game show. What's our game? Like, what's our favorite game? It was Dragnet. I think is what
people
said.
I take it back.
But like, Frank doesn't have a TV.
Yes.
You know, there's not like TVs are still. It's right at that point in time where TVs.
I'm gonna have to go back and look at that.
Yeah, that's great.
Actually, okay. Well,
I definitely remember seeing something about the Prince. On a TV somewhere, either it was like a TV store or something. I feel like I remember seeing like old timey.
I'm gonna have to go back and check. Cause
but because this is about that time, right?
Yeah,
this
50,
sort of puts
yeah,
the
yeah,
show.
That TV.
Oh, I guess 50. 50s, yeah, 60s. This is 50. Yeah,
it's black and white. It's not
fair enough. Fair enough.
No LG. No.
Fair enough.
They're still waiting. They're still waiting on 4K.
Well, thank you guys for joining me as always. We are so excited to do the show. So have a great night. Where can we find you one last time?
You can find me all over the internet at Keith W. Black, and if you want to discuss further, go ahead and write in the comments and all that, and we'll get back to you.
Yes, you can find me on Twitter at Tabolt or on Instagram at Tbolt. Thank you guys very much, and shoot me a tweet and let me know what you think of this episode. Can't wait to come back for more.
Thank you guys much.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.